Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us here. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Dan Patrick with Above the Noise. Today, we're in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And also, we have the Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilscher's General Store, located 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on Routes 11 and 15. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Later in the week, we will have on Dan Dockage from ESPN to talk about the Big Ten and the NCAA tournament. We'll also have Mike DeCourcy on from Big Ten Network and Sporting News, still working on Joe Lunardi as well on bracketology. So we have a lot going on with the NCAA basketball tournament on the horizon and championship week on the horizon as well. Of course, one of the big stories that flew a little bit under the radar this weekend because of the Daytona 500 is that Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, said that Jim Delaney has been keeping athletic directors and presidents informed in general terms on the expansion process in the Big Ten. And Smith says a 14-team Big Ten is, they're not doing anything right now except working on that and looking at realignment and so forth. He says when it comes to adding other schools, they said right now, he says there are rumors. He said, but that's it. He says, we're not doing anything right now. He says, we'll sit and evaluate Rutgers and Maryland's transition. We don't want to mess that up. He says, right now, we're not aggressively pursuing anyone. Now, of course, Maryland and Rutgers, they give Penn State, of course, the East Coast partners. Often, Jim Delaney has referred to it as the bridge, Penn State providing the bridge to Maryland and Rutgers. And they will be in the conference beginning in 2014. 2014 in football, 2014, 2015 in basketball and in other sports. There's been a lot of talk about, with the Big Ten Network's national cable reach, that some people are saying that the Big Ten could mushroom to 18 or 20 schools. And Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, said that among league officials, they don't look that far ahead. He said, we don't sit down and talk like that. He said, we look at individual opportunities. We don't say our end game is to have the entire East Coast. He said, we look at each business situation as it presents itself. And the Big Ten isn't the only conference, of course, watching realignment, because the Big 12 right now says that they're at 10, but people are wondering if they can stay there forever. But they are discussing what Delaney might do next. They're concerned about it. The Big 12 officials pointed out in late January at a meeting among athletic directors that the Big Ten, should it expand, would likely push for schools already included in the American Association of Universities. And in the ACC, that list includes Virginia, North Carolina, Pitt, Georgia Tech, and Duke. I've already explained why Pitt is not going to be the choice. You know, and again, I say this with all due respect to any Pitt fan out there, but the Big Ten has not expanded into a market that includes another Big Ten school since 1953. Their last expansions have been Pennsylvania, Nebraska, New Jersey, and Maryland. Okay? They're going for households, markets that also fit the academic footprint of the Big Ten. Now, Pitt fits the academic footprint without question. And they bring with it, especially great basketball, okay football. No better than okay, but okay football and great basketball. But right now, 83% of the televisions in Pennsylvania get the Big Ten Network. Pitt does not deliver the other 17%. So that's pie in the sky. That's out. But when you look at the ACC, Pitt is among the five schools in the AAU, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, Virginia, Duke. Here's Georgia Tech's big problem. When you have an exit fee of $50 million and your athletic revenue was $60 million last year, that's hard to look at and say, we can't afford to do that. We can't do it unless the exit fee goes down. So we'll talk more about that and baseball and the NCAA tournament coming up. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout and make your deal today, because these cars could be at an auction tomorrow, like a 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with black interior under 7,000 miles, lowest price promise, $17,999. A 2006 Lincoln LS four-door V8 sports sedan, just $12,455. Ford F-150 regular cab, $17,995. A 2012 Hyundai Elantra four-door sedan GLS, just $15,943. And a beautiful 2003 Ford Mustang Premium Mach 1, just $16,997. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24-7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915. 888-536-8017.
Mifflinburg Bank and Trust. Leave your future to us. See what Mifflinburg Bank can do. 'Cause we're the bank that works for you.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by all the retirement planning choices you have today? At Mifflinburg Bank & Trust, we'll take the time to listen to your needs and provide you with the information needed to make prudent decisions about your future. Diversification is important to every financial plan. A certificate of deposit is a safe, FDIC-insured investment option for your retirement portfolio. I'm Bill Grice, office manager at Mifflinburg Bank & Trust. Stop in and talk to us about an IRA. Our offices are located in Mifflinburg, Lewisburg, Milheim, New Berlin, Schmuckendam, and at mbtc.com. For added convenience, Mifflinburg Bank & Trust is coming soon to downtown Lewisburg. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome.
I'm just preparing.
For?
I'm just preparing for the new edition of the Big Ten.
I don't know if there's going to be any.
I'm just saying, I'm prepared.
I don't know. It's right now, it's all rumors and quiet.
You have to admit, if it does happen, though, it is going to be funny to hear that fight song in the Big Ten. Well, I mean, for so many years, it's been associated elsewhere. That's all.
I understand.
But I heard on CBS Sports Radio over the weekend, maybe it's time to start thinking about, you know, new rivalries and evolving a little bit. Because let's face it, at one point, like Duke North Carolina had to develop into a rivalry.
They're 9 miles apart, Kevin.
I realize the geography of it, okay? I'm not naive to that. I'm just saying, the point is, rivalries don't exist. They have to be born. That's my point.
Well, both, yeah. And in order to have a rivalry, both teams have to have a chance to win. Okay?
I realize you could throw a stone and hit the other arena.
Yeah, I mean, both teams have to have a chance to win. There has to be a level of excellence to it. I mean, Penn State, West Virginia. Hey, what a great rivalry in football. It was 35-0-1 for 36 years. That's no rivalry. Maybe to you it's a rivalry because you're desperate to break through. But for the team with the 35, it's like, yeah, get out of the way.
Next.
Yeah. We play whom after you? Yeah. So.
But rivalries have to be born and bred and nurtured and, you know, so
yeah.
You have a chance
both,
for new ones.
Both teams have to have a chance to win. That's the key. Both teams have to have a chance to win. You know, you go through 10 and you go 6-4, whatever, yeah.
You know, the same thing that I remember when Penn State went to the Big Ten, everybody was like, oh, there goes the Temple rivalry. There goes the West Virginia rivalry. There goes the Syracuse.
Yeah, well, those weren't rivalries.
I realize that.
Penn State was routing those teams. I mean, since 1970, Syracuse beat Penn State twice. From 1955 to 1984, West Virginia had a tie. Okay. Pitt and Penn State finally became a rivalry when Tony Dorsett got there, and then, you know, Pitt started winning some games.
I just want to know what the Big East is going to have to do to actually get any sort of TV money. I guess they're working with NBC now.
No, Big East is going to go with ESPN.
Oh, really? NBC yes. Put in a bid for that. I thought they had a shot.
They had a shot, but there's a right of first refusal in the contract. ESPN met it.
Wow.
They're on. No, ESPN and the Big East are in. They're together.
From a football standpoint, is ESPN going to lose some money on that?
I would doubt it. It's not that extensive a contract. And ESPN is the single most profitable arm of Disney. It is.
Mickey's not doing that well? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No. ESPN is the single most profitable arm of the Disney Corporation. Realize that?
I mean, I knew they did well.
The single most profitable of everything they have, all the properties they have, ABC, ESPN, the parks, merchandise, whatever, ESPN's the most profitable. Officiating in college basketball again came to light last night. Three really good officials worked the Kansas-Iowa State game last night. Mark Whitehead, whom I've gotten to know a little bit over time, and Mark's a great guy, and he's a guy who worked the championship game last year in the NCAA. That's how well he did. Tom O'Neill was a veteran. I've been around Tom a lot, but you know what? Except for saying, hey, how you doing, that's about the extent of the conversation I've ever had with him. But he's a really good official. Veteran, been around the block, seen almost everything. And Bert Smith, who's a very good official. So you have Mark Whitehead, Tom O'Neill, Bert Smith working last night's game. At the end of the game, you have Kansas player charging to the bucket. Iowa State player sets up outside the arc. There is absolute contact. Now, what I can't stand in college basketball is flopping. Okay, I can't stand flopping. And I think the only way to remove flopping is to call a foul and the player's automatically removed from the game and cannot be brought back in until the next whistle. You're going to try and fake out everybody with flopping. You know, you want to eliminate it? That's, you know, you got to do something to eliminate it, so you got to be extreme about it. So I can't stand flopping. Well, at the end of this regulation, this is no flop. This is, boom, contact. A call, one way or the other, has to be made. Charge block, okay? Has to be made. Because one of the keys in calling a foul is not contact, contrary to popular belief. It is using contact to gain an advantage. So one way or the other, an advantage was gained in that last night. One way or the other. The advantage in terms of calling a block would be he got there late and he's just trying to impede you getting to the basket. Thus, as a defender, he gained the advantage illegally. Charge would be, look, he's there. I ran through him. Then I passed the ball out. Okay? And it's a charge. But something has to be called. One of the great misnomers in this business, which fans have picked up on, is as follows. You can't let the officials determine the end of the game. The players have to be able to determine it. When you commit a foul or a penalty, the player is determining the outcome of the game. Okay? I'm on the 5-yard line. There's 2 seconds left. I run a power sweep with my running back, sweeping over the right side. My guard pulls out. Linebacker in pursuit. Linebacker's about to get there. Guard tackles linebacker. Am I supposed to keep the flag in the pocket? I can't do that. It's a penalty. Bang, 15 yards, holding. For all we know, he gets to the running back. The running back, you know, stiff arms him and sheds him and still scores. But the player that held gained the advantage, and the player that held determined the outcome of the play and determined the outcome of the game. You held. It's illegal. 15 yards. Player did determine outcome. Player committed penalty. Same thing in basketball. You go to the bucket, boom. I mean, I may be going for the ball, maybe inadvertent, but I hit you on the arm with 0.5 to go. You have to call it, okay? You can't turn the end of games into roller derby. because you're, well, we want to let the players determine it. When you commit a foul, you are determining the outcome. And that is one of the more ridiculous, silly, idiotic arguments I have heard for years about this. Okay? It's simplistic. You have to think it through. If you commit a foul, the player is determining the outcome. The player fouled. Can't look at this. Well, the officials can't determine the outcome. The official didn't determine the outcome. He fouled him. I got to call it.
I've always looked at it this way. If it's a foul or a penalty at the 3-minute mark of the game, why isn't it at the 3-second mark of the game?
Of course. Now, I don't want a foul called. Okay, the game is.
I don't want a hand checking
right,
foul.
Right. Hand check foul 30 feet from the basket. That's the official determining the game. That's ridiculous. I'm talking about something where, hey, look, I'm going to the bucket or I'm taking a jump shot. I get hit. Okay, you get hit. Guess what? It's a foul. The player that fouled you determined the outcome of the game. Okay, so this argument about the officials can't determine, the players do. The players, when they foul, are determining the outcome of the game. They shouldn't have fouled.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Another big night in the old postgame world for Jim Boeheim. I mean, wow. What the heck was that deal last night? The media is asking him questions afterward, and he just, I mean.
Lost it? Flipped out? How would you describe it?
He just was rude. All right? Just plain rude. A few minutes, let's see. When someone implied that the Orange might have done anything differently against Gardner, or may have options if DeJuan Coleman had been healthy, Boeheim bristled. Our two best defensive players were in the game, he said. But you should try coaching because that's what you think you are. Maybe you should try that. Okay. A few minutes later, Jeff Goldman, CBSSports.com, and by the way, extremely respected by many, asked Boeheim a question about leadership or the lack thereof, coming from key players. I don't even understand that, Boeheim said, looking exasperated. You think because you come to Marquette and lose a 2- or 3-point game, you need a new guy? I don't. I think Marquette has lost a game at home this year. When you lose a game, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to revamp everything. We lost a game. Someone then asked Boeheim a softball question about Milwaukee and Bradley Center, a building that he might not have the occasion to coach in again because they're going to the ACC. He then took the time to rip the Big East. He says, it is what it is. When the session, punctuated by periods of silence and perhaps a little contempt from both sides, continued, any more coaches here? Want to ask another coaching question? I'd be happy to take it. I've only been doing this 37 years, but I'm sure you've got more ideas of who we should play or who we shouldn't play or who should lead. What do I know? A few journalists then later asked if they've ever seen a blow-up like that from Boeheim or others. The answer was, of course, that wasn't that bad. As Gardner slid behind the microphone for his session, they couldn't help but hearing the words jerk store. Not implying that Boeheim is a jerk. I've only seen the man in person a couple of times, all in group press settings. I can't comment on his character in any meaningful way. I mean, most questions in press conferences, okay, most questions in press conferences are very much like questions on a talk show, pregame show. Um, 25% of the questions are really, really good questions. 50% of the questions are questions that you just need to ask. You know, coach expects it. Fans expect it, you expect it. It's just typical run-of-the-mill questions you need to ask, you know, they're not good, bad. They're just questions, you know, you need to ask. And you expect it. Questions you expect to hear. The other 25% where you sit back. The other 25% you sit back and go, oh, my God. So when someone asks you about, like, you know, you're up 11 points, you lose it, are you concerned at all about the leadership on the team? There's nothing. All he has to say is, we're fine in that regard. Roll with it, whatever. They, you know, you can tell by the tone of a question whether it's a question or whether they're questioning you. Okay? And when you're just asking questions, there's nothing wrong with asking a question because you're trying to get insight as to what they think. When they're questioning you, that means you have an agenda. So you have to determine who has an agenda and who doesn't when they're asking a question. You usually can tell. Yeah.
I'm trying to find that one piece where he asked if there are any more coaches here.
Right. So, I mean, that's just, you know, he's been praised left and right by the media from when he won, you know, when he won a championship, when he won his 900th game and so forth, and the people wax poetic about the job he's done and how long he's been there and so fine. But, at that stage of life, to be that paranoid about how, you know, about your ability. Let me give you at least a rundown of what we're doing the next few days here. Coming up tomorrow, we will have Joe Lenardi, the master of bracketology. He will be on the show tomorrow to talk about where the brackets line up right now and why he has it lined up the way he does. Okay? You might as well go to the best. We ended up getting the best in Joe Lenardi. We'll talk to Tim Never from spring training on the Pittsburgh Pirates tomorrow. Thursday, ESPN's Dan Dockich will join us to talk college basketball as well. He is highly opinionated. I think he's entertaining. I think he's become one of the better analysts in all of college basketball in a very short period of time because he's blunt when he talks, direct, doesn't sugarcoat it. He has a little different approach this year than he did last year. He's kind of, you know, he's understanding you got to tone it just a bit at times, but he's done that. We'll have Dan Dockich on Thursday. Friday, we're going to have Mike DeCourcy from Sporting News and Big Ten Network. So that's our lineup for the rest of the week. Are you happy?
I'm content, yeah.
But back to the point on last night's Iowa State-Kansas game. Now, Iowa State had Kansas by 4 at Fog Allen and didn't close the deal. Last night had them by 5 down the stretch with about 25 seconds to go. Again, did not close the deal. Okay, something to be said for that. Although they were hitting free throws left and right, but Corey Lucius left one out there after all the free throws they hit. He left one out there at the end. And you know, when you sit there and look at, again, this stuff about officials determining outcomes versus players. The player, you know, if the player commits a foul or a penalty, the player is determining the outcome. Now, let's get to the Super Bowl for one moment, because we've heard a lot about the Super Bowl. I have maintained the entire time that is an uncatchable ball. That if you let the play go through and there's no contact at all, he can't get that ball. Not only can't he get the ball, he can't get the ball in bounds. It's not going to be a completed pass. Kaepernick does not throw a good ball on that play. Just flat out does not throw a good ball on that play.
But does that matter if it's holding?
If it's not catchable, it's not catchable. What does it matter what kind of contact happened in that play?
But that's a hard thing to judge on a holding play. I mean, I can understand the pass interference.
Okay, you run out of field.
You're saying he didn't have enough field to catch it, not that he wouldn't get to the ball.
He can't catch the ball.
Okay. All right.
He may catch the ball, but it's going to be 3 yards out of bounds.
All right.
That ball's not a catchable ball at all. That's not catchable. You think he could catch that ball? That ball landed beyond the white, which is the border. I mean, nobody's really talked about this. Kaepernick throws a lousy ball on that play. You got to give your guy a chance to make a play. He doesn't even give, you could talk about what happened to Crabtree and where they grabbed him, held him, ball in the air, whatever, this, that, and the other thing. Kaepernick never even gave his guy a chance to make the play, even if he got there.
But see, I just don't think that should matter for a holding call. For pass interference, I agree.
Kevin, where's the ball? He can't catch the ball for a touchdown. It's an incomplete pass.
But how do you make that judgment in a split second as an
official?
Because
you look at the ball sail over your head and say, I can't catch the damn thing.
You're missing the point.
They can't catch it. It's an uncatchable ball.
I respectfully disagree with you there. I'm sorry.
The ball.
Listen, you're telling me that there is absolutely no way he cannot fully extend and keep a toe or keep two toes in bounds.
No, not where he threw the ball. Where he threw the ball, you're probably going to be 2-3 feet out of bounds.
And that may be the case. But I think in a whole...
You can't catch it. Nah. If you can't catch it, it can't be interference.
No, I agree. It can't be interference. I'm saying holding. I don't think it was interference.
Crabtree
it
held
was
just
holding.
As much as he did. And what did Crabtree do? He grabbed him.
Okay, who grabbed first?
We can go that way. It's irrelevant. The ball can't be caught. The ball cannot be caught. The pass is so poor on that play. I mean, when he threw the ball up, that's the first thing I thought was, oh, they have no chance at that. None. Zero. Zip. You can't, like, toe? Shaquille O'Neal with a toe in can't get that ball. Can't. The ball's thrown too far. It's a lousy pass by him.
I'm not debating the fact whether that pass was catchable or not. I'm debating whether it should have been a difference in a holding call or not. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it matters whether the ball's catchable or not if you're being held.
For example, it didn't matter if they called holding on the safety.
Right.
It didn't matter. Holding all over the place on the safety.
It was still two points.
Guess what the penalty is on a holding penalty in the end zone?
2 points.
A safety.
Right. And as a matter of fact, I probably would have told my linemen, hold somebody.
No, they were. The Ravens were told. The Ravens were told, no matter what, hold your brains out.
Drag them down. Do not let them block the football.
Oh, no. They were told that. And you could see it on the play. They're holding guys left and right.
I so would have done that.
Because guess what? What's the penalty?
Right.
A safety.
It's better than 7 points.
All right. You're going to have safety no matter what. So that's why he's like, I'm not going to call that. But that ball is uncatchable. That is not a decision by an official that determines the outcome of the game. Colin Kaepernick determined the outcome of the game. Just like he determined the outcome of the game by taking too much time at the line of scrimmage on third down, he then threw the ball to Kingdom Come on fourth down.
Actually, the mistake was made that they didn't take a timeout. That was the mistake that was made. They took the timeout at the wrong time.
Maybe.
I mean, if it's going to be your last play, don't you want to take the timeout there to make sure? I mean, that's going to be your best chance to tie and or win the game, depending on the situation.
Maybe.
You want to take the timeout there. I don't think you save that and put it in your back pocket. Oh, in case we don't make it.
Now, last night's game, Kansas-Iowa State, something has to be called at the end. I don't care what you call. I don't care if you call block or charge. That's not a flop. There is legitimate, I'm at the spot, did I get there late or not? You have to determine that. And absolute contact on that play. Something must be called. And these are three really, really good officials. Okay? Really good officials. Mark Whitehead did the championship game last year. Tom O'Neill, I've watched Mark work for years and years and years. Know Mark a little bit. Okay? Tom O'Neill, don't know at all except to say, hi, how you doing? That's the extent of that. But I thought Tom O'Neill was just a good pros pro official for a long, long time. And I think Bert Smith's a really good official. So you have three really good officials on the floor. The fact that none of them make a call at that point, right? And I don't want to hear the lament of, you have to let the players determine the outcome. The player, when the player fouls or commits a penalty, they are determining the outcome. You can't make the end of the game like roller derby. Where anything goes. No autopsy, no foul.
Well, let me ask you this question. I guess the Big 12 is reviewing this.
It doesn't matter. What, they can review it all they want.
What does that mean? They're just going
to... Curtis Shaw, whom I know, because he refereed in the Big 10 for years. He is the director of officiating in the Big 12. They may come out with a statement one way or the other, but it doesn't do Iowa State any good.
That's like what the NFL did with the replacement officials. Yeah, that didn't look like the right call. All right, moving on.
Yeah, but you can't do anything about it. Once call's made, call's made. And I don't want to hear about, oh, yeah, well, how about replay? Replay doesn't do anything in that. Yeah, never use. Okay? It just never is. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. It's 1-800-795-9565. You know, I looked at Mike Trout in a spring training game the other day. They keep talking about, like, he's heavier, he has girth and stuff. He looked the same to me. Did I miss something? And Miguel Cabrera and Jonathan Papelbon. Okay? I was just handed a note. That ball just landed. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. Welcome back. Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Hilscher's General Store, 7 miles south of Salem's Grove on routes 11 and 15. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Jace, welcome. Thank you for waiting, and we welcome you to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm a little confused about that one ruling you mentioned about. You said about there's a safety call if there's holding in the end zone on the offense. The defensive team, could you explain that? I'm a little...
On the offense. Quarterback goes back to... Yeah, quarterback... That's in the game. Example, and there's a holding penalty on the play. It's a safety. It's automatic.
Same
thing on the punt play. Yeah, on the offense.
So they don't have the choice of whether to continue or to take it right there.
Well, because the quarterback's in the end zone when it happened, that's why.
Okay, very good. I understand now. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome. Appreciate that.
Yep.
Yeah, if the ball's in the end zone and there's holding in the end zone, it's an automatic safety.
Right. That's why you see, for example, there was a play in the Orange Bowl, Penn State and Florida State, where the quarterback struggled and got it out to the half-yard line. Why? Because he was trying to avoid a safety. Now, they punted. Penn State got the ball 2 plays later, scored a touchdown. That was the Ethan Kilmer catch. But he struggled his guts out to get out of the end zone because he didn't want to get a safety. Bob and Milton, go ahead.
Yeah, Steve. I got a few things. One about the football game, the Super Bowl. What you're saying. It was I watched it too, and I'm a Pittsburgh fan. So I really was. Yeah. I was kind of rooting against both teams because I didn't want to see San Francisco get their sixth ring, and I didn't.
I feel your pain.
Right, and I'm a Baltimore. I'm not a Baltimore fan because you know how we are with Baltimore.
That's right, brother.
I was kind of rooting for one as one did bad, and rooting for the other. But I kind of disagree with you. I mean, yes, it was a non-catchable ball, but. I've seen already, and I think you know too, I've seen holding calls, receivers get held on the opposite side of the field, and the ball's not even being thrown
to them.
And so
I agree with you completely.
you know, which why would you throw a flag against a receiver that's being held on the opposite side of the field when they're not even throwing the ball to the man?
Exactly. And I've never liked that call, and I've always thought that was ridiculous.
Right. But then I agree on one thing. San Francisco had the ball, I believe, on the 7-yard line with first and goal. And I think if you're a Super Bowl team and you deserve to get a ring, you should be at 4 plays. If you can't get it in the end zone, well, then it's time to go home, you know?
Yeah. I mean, as much as Colin Kaepernick was praised for getting them there and all the things that he did on third down and on fourth down, he could not have performed more poorly than he did at that moment. Because in the two key moments, he lost track of the play clock and they had to call a timeout. And then they checked from what was going to be, well, obviously you could tell, a really good play, then eventually checked into a different play because they changed the play up because they had to call the timeout. And then he threw that ball who knows where. I think it landed near the airport.
Right. Where you had the Steelers when you had Holmes catching the two-tap, you know, toes in the end zone, which that ball, nobody thought he'd bring that ball in either, but you had a team with a better throw, and he threw it where only one guy could catch it. And but, you know, back to the basketball, and I'll tell you, I'm an Indiana Hoosier fan, so I'm rooting all Indiana Hoosiers. But
they're the best team I've seen in person this year, Bob.
Yeah, but what I don't understand, too, and I can't this is really gets me, I see these teams that have these home field winning streaks of 20, 25, 28 games, yet they're not even in the top 25 or in the top 10. And I feel these officials, like you were saying about the Iowa State game, I don't think toward the end of the game when there's, 40 seconds left or 10 seconds left, they don't want to be held accountable for one team winning on a last-second shot. You know, they either have a team win by 10 points or 11 points or whatever. I just think that they don't want to be responsible for calling that charge. They feel maybe a guy should be taking an outside shot and a clear shot because, you know, they're going to take a lot of heat if they do call a foul and the guy ends up making his foul shots and the other team loses.
I understand your point, Bob. Mm-hmm. I understand your point, Bob, but I'll be honest with you. Okay. When you drive to the basket, right, and even though I may be trying to ball and I miss the ball and I fall through and I hit your arm, I have determined the outcome of the game, not the official. I fouled you.
You're right. But you also.
It has to be called, but I can't. In terms of determining the game, like a meaningless hand check 35 feet from the basket. Now that determines the game. That's over officiating.